Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, the contributions of American Indian nations to our history have not always been fully explored, or probably you could say not been fully explored. Take out the always. On the show today, we're going to be talking about how the Wisconsin Historical Society is changing that for its organization. And in the studio with us today, Rebecca Comfort is the American Indian Nations liaison with the Wisconsin Historical Society. So we'll talk with her about her job and some of the changes the Historical Society has made, and certainly love to hear from you, too, as we move along today. What would you like to learn about Wisconsin's Native history? Have you visited perhaps a museum that does a good job at showing the contribution of American Native tribes? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Rebecca Comfort, welcome.
Yes, thanks for having me, Larry. I appreciate being here and being on the show today.
It's great to have you here. Let's talk about the Historical Society for a minute. Now, what went behind the creating of your position?
Sure. So I think that, you know, when we talk about the history and what we now refer to as Wisconsin, Wisconsin's a relatively new political concept. When we look at how long a human story has been perpetuating and existing in this place, we can date that back to at least the last 12,000 years. So if we think of Wisconsin history and we're limiting ourselves to statehood, 1848 forward, we're really negating 98.6% of the history that has happened in this place. So it's hard to say that you're telling history if you're not also including or at least acknowledging those 12,000 years of ongoing human story, habitation, and contributions that the tribal nations have made and are continuing to make in our state today.
Yeah, I'm glad you said are continuing to make, because the ongoing story sometimes is left out.
Yes, history is, it's not old stuff. It's today. It's what's happening now. It's what's happening tomorrow. And I think that's something that the Wisconsin Historical Society has always recognized. We have always been prolific collectors of history.
Yeah.
And actively collecting. So the joke is we're kind of the state's best kept secret, mm-hmm. because we really don't have just a state history collection. We have a national collection about our country's history, North America's history, and in particular, tribal history as well. We have extensive newspaper collections of all tribal papers that have been published. The Cherokee Star, which was one of the first tribal papers, we have their entire archive dating back from the 1800s.
It's really cool. I'm thinking about your position. Are there other positions like this around the country, or even here in Wisconsin?
Yeah. So there are actually quite a few tribal liaisons within the state of Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin Historical Society is a state agency. We're kind of a hybrid agency. We're a state agency. We're a membership agency. And then we're also have a nonprofit arm as well. When you look at an executive order that Governor Doyle signed in 2004, Executive Order Number 39, that executive order was reaffirming the direct government-to-government relationship that the state of Wisconsin has with the tribal nations that reside within our state's borders. Prior to that order, and then in some cases as a result of that order, we see all of the other cabinet agencies that exist within our state government have official tribal liaison positions. So the Department of Administration, Department of Corrections, Health and Human Services all have these positions ingrained in their organizational structure because of that unique government-to-government relationship that the state has with the 11 federally recognized tribal nations that we have in the state. And then you'll notice that the Wisconsin Historical Society uses the number 12 because
yeah.
we also acknowledge the Bretherton Nation located in the Fond du Lac area. The Bretherton do not have state or federal tribal recognition, but that does not necessarily deter their identity, their political identity. And so we're inclusive of the Bretherton as well in that number. So that's sometimes why you hear the 11 and or 12, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah. And how do you see your responsibilities?
My responsibilities really start at the director's office level. So my position is located in the director's office, and I am responsible for fostering direct government-to-government relationships between the leadership in our historical society. Christian Overland is our director, and elected tribal officials across the state, whether that's a tribal chairman or tribal president or elected council members. The tribes all have constitutions. They all have elected officials and governing bodies. Mm-hmm. And so in many ways, there's a lot of parallels that you see with how we as a state agency work with our elected representatives in state government. And that also should be mirrored and reflected in a similar manner with how we develop and cultivate relationships with tribal nations.
What's been the reaction to the new position?
That it's been long awaited. I think when you look at all of the state agencies that we have, and the fact that we were kind of fell through the cracks since we are not a cabinet agency, and so there wasn't kind of that response to develop a tribal liaison position much earlier, like some of the other cabinet agencies had. So I will say this is a position that the Wisconsin Historical Society has known that it's needed for a very long time. And the work that the Wisconsin Historical Society does with the tribes did not begin when I started in April of 2018. I think it's extremely important to acknowledge that we have a lot of other existing relationships throughout society staff members and tribal representatives through different projects, whether it's the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, publishing Native authors talking about Wisconsin's Native history, or whether it's the relationship that we have between the State Historic Preservation Office, which is located within the Wisconsin Historical Society, and tribal historic preservation officers. So the work that we've been doing has been ongoing. I think my position is really just looking at the full scope of what we have done, celebrating those accomplishments and achievements and ongoing work, but then also really growing that relationship at a higher level so that we have more, reciprocal communication that's going back and forth, and that we're able to identify what our shared priorities and goals are. And then that influences our decision making with regards to how we're telling history, what we're collecting. So it's really just the culmination of long going efforts, but then also kind of shoring up these collaborations to actively work towards the same goals that we have for the future.
Yeah. Our guest today, Rebecca Comfort, American Indians, Indian Nations liaison with the Wisconsin Historical Society. As we talk with her about telling Wisconsin's Native history, I hope you'll join in. We have a caller online. We'll take that call in just a second, but you can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Ellen in Mequon. Ellen, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much for the show. I'm hoping that you can help those of us who are outside the tribal affiliation, how to accurately and respectfully identify you, whether it's Native American or do you have a preference or again, what can we do to be respectful and appropriate?
So, Ellen, thank you for asking that question. That is most often the first question that I receive, regardless of who I'm presenting to. It's sort of the initial question that people have a tendency to get hung up on, because there is a lot of kind of discrepancy depending on what setting you're in and what language or terms you see being used. And so to really get that out of the way, it allows us to dig much deeper into the context and understanding of what's really important behind these terms or behind these names. Mm. So when we talk about broad spectrum terminology that we see used in reference to Native people or tribes, you tend to see the terms American Indian, Native American, First Nations, Indigenous,
yeah.
Indian, First Americans. And really there's pros and cons to each of them. Ultimately, when you look at the terms and you break down, say, the term Native American, when we talk about America, we're talking about a continental population. And it's not just North America, there's also South America, right? When we use the term American Indian, it's still, again, kind of referring to this pan-Indianism that, you know, in one way or another, really discredits the deep tribal diversity, diversity of culture, language, history that we have across the contiguous 48 states, plus Hawaii and Alaska. And so ultimately, you're going to see the term Native American often used in educational settings. At the elementary level, you tend to see Native American. And then when you shift to secondary and then post-secondary, you'll notice that the textbooks tend to transition to using American Indian. And really, one isn't necessarily better than the other. A lot of times, tribal nations within particular regions will have more broad regional preferences. You'll notice the term First Nations, which was really originally used in Canada, has made its way down now down into the Great Lakes. And it's really catching on because as opposed to some of the other broad scale terminology that we're looking at, the term First Nation or First Nations is really referencing a key component of American Indian identity, and that's that it's a political identity first and foremost before it is a racial or an ethnic identity. So using terminology like that really is putting a bit of meat and a bit of context behind the word. But ultimately, if you know specific tribal affiliations, so Larry mentioned in his introduction that I am an enrolled member of the Keweenaw Indian Community Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe, which is very long, but it's also very specific.
Yeah.
So it never hurts to ask. Some people have preferences, but otherwise we say just be tribally specific if and when you can.
Ellen, does that help?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Our guest today, Rebecca Comfort. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at Wisconsin's Native history today on the show with Rebecca Comfort, American Indian Nations liaison with the Wisconsin Historical Society. Great to have her with us. And certainly, if you have questions as we move along today, I hope you'll join in. What are your thoughts on how Native history is portrayed, for example? Do you have questions about the Wisconsin Historical Society and its Native History Program? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Can you talk some more about, Rebecca, about how Native history has been presented in the past?
Sure. So getting back to this notion of, you know, Wisconsin as a relatively new political concept, America is a relatively new political concept. We've only been a country, you know, for less than 300 years. When you look at that in terms of other nations around the world, we're relatively young. And we need to remember that when Europeans first arrived on this continent, that it was not vast wilderness that was uncharted and unpopulated. There were extremely complex economies, nations, trade networks that were happening across the continental United States and North America. And so those people had to go somewhere to make room for settlements. And so when we look at kind of this very complex and painful historical narrative that then played out to allow for the formation of the United States and the political identity that we have now, we see that there's a constant threat of land loss, forced removal, a lot of policies that are taking place in the United States government, either getting in the Indian business or out of the Indian business. And it's hard to reconcile that now because it seems to very much go against a lot of the principles that this country was founded on. And so we get a little hung up when we're trying to talk about that in the terms of history books. What historical narrative are we sharing? And really, adults tend to shy away from controversy, from things that are taboo. But I think that if we look to our youngest learners, particularly in elementary school, we can be reminded that children love to learn about conflict. They love to understand the complexities of why two parties or more were not disagreeing. And so the tendency to tell the story that kind of unfolded here from 1492 forward, from 1777 forward, it tends to be told from a very narrow perspective of, who ultimately gets to write history are the people who are in power. And so that narrative has been kind of skewed towards one side that has, really, I think, not intentionally tried to discount what has happened here. Mm-hmm. But it's much easier to paint it in kind of this reflective, like romanticized light of, let's get back to our foundation, our ideals of, what it means to be good land stewards. And while that's good, it also, we're doing ourselves a disservice by not fully examining what our role was as a country, as citizens, in what has happened here, and then how that's translated to books. And so what I notice is that there's a deep hunger throughout the state of Wisconsin to talk about Native history, to learn about it. But there's a reason when, you ask any one room full of folks, what do you know about Native Americans? Mm-hmm. What do you know about Native history? And people will tell you that they were the Native people, we are the original stewards of this land. We've been here since time immemorial. A lot of Native Americans were removed west of the Mississippi River. But then it generally stops there, right? So if we also look kind of in parallel to how our country was forming, we can also look at how museums during that same time were really beginning to shape that narrative. It tended to be exclusionary for a very long time. Americans saw Native people as a disappearing race or people that would cease to exist in the future. And so there was a rush by Americans to collect, quote-unquote, artifacts from Native cultures, except they were collected out of context. We get into ethical considerations. That's an entirely separate different conversation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then when museums around the country are then taking these artifacts and figuring out how to curate them, how to present them in museum settings, we see a tendency to kind of group things according to utility. So, you might see a collection of spoons or eating utensils. And that really does a disservice, I think, to everyone involved, because you know, why do different cultures have, you know, do things differently, or what is the cultural significance behind food, right? We know that food and culture are so intrinsically interconnected, and that, you know, we can't separate food and culture in Wisconsin, right?
No.
If you ask people about supper clubs or Friday fish fries. And so it translates across cultures too. You know, what does that mean in the context of, say, the Ho-Chunk Nation and the Ho-Chunk Nation's spoons that they whittle? There's a deeper story behind these objects or artifacts. And traditionally, we haven't really been great at telling that because we haven't provided the space for these different cultures and populations to come together and shape a narrative that really gets that kind of the meat of the story, what's behind there.
Yeah. Do you think some of it is just I don't know if ignorance is the right word, maybe it is, of not knowing that and then not bothering to look deeply enough?
Yeah, I don't think that it's willful ignorance in most cases.
No.
It's really just a product of our educational system. You know, I am a product of public education. My understanding of Native American history, if it was relegated to only what I had learned in textbooks in school, would be very limited and wrong in a lot of cases. And that's not any one individual's fault. It is just more of a collective shortfall that our society has kind of come to realize and is now trying to reconcile. There are efforts to try to kind of shift the social, I think, responsibility for better educating our citizenry about Native history and the contributions of American Indians. Wisconsin, along with several other states, do have statutes that stipulate that public schools are required to teach American Indian Studies. In Wisconsin, that's colloquially known as Wisconsin Act 31, which came out of, if you'll recall, a pretty tense and violent period in our state's history between 1987 and 1991, the spearfishing conflict or the walleye wars that were being carried out in the northern part of the state between the Ojibwe nations that were asserting their treaty rights that were negotiated in the treaties of 1848, 1854, and then the general public not understanding necessarily what the stipulations of treaty rights are, what they mean. And so ultimately the state said, you know, our public schools aren't teaching this information. This was a political negotiation that the United States federal government and the Ojibwe nations took part in negotiating and signing. It was an agreement and essentially payment for ceding millions upon millions of acres, a very large portion, which now makes up our state, right? The state had to acquire that land in one regard or another. And that was done via treaty negotiations. And so, you know, this lack of understanding about what that means for us today, not just in 1854 or the mid or early 1800s when those treaties were being signed. And so Wisconsin Act 31, these statutes are written in by state legislators in the 1989-1991 biennial budget. We've had some shortfalls with implementation, but there is a lot more in schools now than there was even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I know a good friend of mine, Patty Lowe, produced a book that has seen a lot of use across the state and is part of that program.
Yes. Yeah. Patty Lowe's two books, Indian Nations of Wisconsin and Native People of Wisconsin, have really kind of been the de facto Act 31 textbooks. Native People of Wisconsin is used pretty heavily in the elementary grade levels, usually second or third through eighth grade, and then Indian Nations of Wisconsin is really the kind of secondary to post-secondary level textbook that's still used. And we're so thankful for Patty for putting the effort in to write those in collaboration with the tribes, right? Yeah. She went to each of the nations to curate the information and how it was shared in that book.
Let's take some calls. Chris in Adams, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I own a lot that's actually three city lots, and two of them are built upon. And the third one, according to urban legend, is a Native American burial site. And the reason that nobody could get a permit to build there is because that's recorded in the county someplace. And so I decided that I'm going to honor that. I'm digging up all the grass and I'm going to plant prairie, because there are little things that everybody can do to just honor the legacy of the people that were here before us.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate that very much, Chris. A comment, Rebecca?
Yeah, Chris, thank you for sharing that. And it's wonderful to hear that you're wanting to help with, it sounds like a bit of a restoration effort and stewarding the land that you have that is significant to our history. The state of Wisconsin does have a state burial law, and the Wisconsin Historical Society can help with cataloging that site. So I would encourage you as well, Chris, if you're looking for additional resources or information, to reach out to the state historical or the state historic preservation office. And if your site is not cataloged in the state record, then perhaps we can help with that as well.
Yeah, makes good sense. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Well, David in Iowa County will go to you next. Hi, David.
Hi. Hello. Thank you. I just wanted to reiterate I'm not a Native American, but I grew up in Wisconsin, and I sympathized utterly with the shameful treatment that Native people have experienced over the centuries, much before my ancestors came to this area. And I would like I'm an artist, and I would like your guest to comment about specifically the first American art magazine, which I'm subscribed to and I'm familiar with, and it's a wonderful resource for scholarship about exactly what is being considered by the Historical Society. And also the most recent winter issue of 2020 has a review of the Ho-Chunk art exhibit that is currently, or I believe it may be ending now, at the Overture Center in Madison. So thank you. And my phone is running out of batteries. So
And the title of the magazine was The First American Art Magazine?
Yes.
All right.
So thanks for that, David. I'm not familiar myself with the magazine. I do subscribe to the Smithsonian's. They have a magazine that's included with their subscription for the National Museum of the American Indian. But Native art is certainly an intrinsic part of history. And it's interesting. I went to school here at UW-Madison as well, and I studied art and American Indian studies. And I took a class with Nancy Mythlow. Nancy is indigenous, and she specializes in Indian arts and crafts in particular. And Nancy wrote, she has a great article called No Word for Art in Our Language. And so when you look at kind of art for the sake of just beauty alone, and then things that are crafted for utility or for function, something that's I think so important to point out and to kind of recognize is that in a lot of Native cultures, and today you see obviously contemporary American Indian art, but getting back to kind of Nancy's the sentiment that she's expressing in this article, no art, no word for art in our language, really talks about how beauty is inextricably just worked into everyday life, right? The things, how we use things, how we're interacting with them. And you are correct that the display that was the exhibition that was on display at the Overture Center.
Yeah.
I know it was co-curated by a graduate student, Kendra Greendeer. She is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation and is also Red Cliff. And I'm really glad that you pointed that out, because it reminded me as well, we have a number of tribal museums that are operated in the state by the tribal nations. And the Ho-Chunk Nation actually just opened the Ho-Chunk Nation Museum. It is the first time that the nation has had a museum in their history. And that that museum opened in Toma. Josie Lee is the director of the Ho-Chunk Nation's museum. And they are exhibiting a late Ho-Chunk Nation painter, his work now. So I'm excited to get up there and see it myself next week.
Oh, that's great. Could you comment on other museums that may be around the state that people?
Yeah, absolutely. So whenever you are near a tribal nation, the Oneida Nation, for instance, if you're in Green Bay, they're right next door. Green Bay Packers have Oneida Nation Gate, right? The Oneida Nation has a wonderful tribal museum that is just a couple of minutes outside of Green Bay. The Forest County Potawatomi also have a tribal museum and cultural center and library that was constructed and built fairly recently. And that is just a phenomenal resource for the greater Crandon community at large. There are museums that have been operating for quite a long time. For instance, the Lac du Flambeau Ojibwe, located just outside of Minocqua. The Lac du Flambeau also have a tribal museum.
There's a new state archive preservation facility that we should probably talk about, too, because it includes an American Indian care suite.
Yeah. So the Wisconsin Historical Society is currently working, and you can say we've technically been currently working on a new museum since 1999, so 21 years. But the first stage of that was really construction of this state-of-the-art facility. It is not a storage facility. That I think does the amazing advances that are in this facility a huge disservice. So the first part of the new museum project was really the construction and completion of the State Archive Preservation Facility, which is located on the near east side of Madison. That is a facility that is actually owned by the Department of Administration, and so we share that facility with the Veterans Museum as well, or the Department of Veterans Affairs. And in that facility is where we will be housing all objects, Wisconsin Historical Society collections, archives that are not in display at the museum that we have currently, or at the future museum that we're now working on. And as part of that space, we have a dedicated suite. It kind of doesn't necessarily have an official name. I'm tending to lean towards American Indian Cultural Care Suite. And that space was developed in collaboration between the Historical Society and representatives from tribal nations, starting back in, I think, about 2008 is when conversations started. There's a recognition that the tribes, as well as ourselves, need to be better stewards, working together to steward and care for things in our collection that in Native cultures, objects are not necessarily inanimate, and they require care that is much more conducive to the care that you might give something that is living rather than something that you would consider as a static artifact. And so since these things that we have in our collection, these objects, cultural resources, and assets really need to be loved and cared for, we needed to create a space to allow that to happen. And allow it to happen in a way that is not prohibitive, I think, of traditional preservation practices, or conservation practices. And so that's what this facility or the space within within the new State Archive Preservation Facility is for. It has a dedicated HVAC system, which is pretty amazing because that building, it will set off the fire alarms and alert the State Capitol Police long before any human would be able to detect smoke or heat or fire, with the exception of the care suite. So there are traditional medicines involved in traditional practices, care practices. Mm. And so this space actually allows for the burning of those medicines inside the building as well as outside of it.
Oh. And the museum itself, the new museum, if you look at what currently existed in the museum, I think it was fairly minimal when it came to Native history here.
It's very mediocre.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an example of where we were.
What you were talking about when we started.
Right. It's organized chronologically on four floors, and it's built in an old hardware store. It is not, so that building was really not meant to house a museum. And it's organized chronologically, and so it puts American Indians in kind of this stereotypical, quote-unquote, prehistory context. And then we see the rise of industrialization to present day. So we can kind of see, you know, out of the gate why that's problematic, especially getting back to where we started in the conversation. Instead, we could perhaps be talking about how the tribes, if there is a tribal seat of government in your county, there is a very good chance that the tribe is the largest or second largest employer in the county. And that is across government jobs, businesses, the tribe's own businesses. And so we really should be sharing that history too, right?
Right. Well, what are some good resources for learning more about Wisconsin Indian Nations?
So I would be remiss if I did not plug WisconsinFirstNations.org. WisconsinFirstNations.org is a website that curates vetted resources that are aimed at use for classroom instruction, getting back to Wisconsin Act 31. And they're vetted by the tribes, by the other partners in the Wisconsin Act 31 Coalition, which includes everyone from the Wisconsin Historical Society, Wisconsin Public Television, Department of Public Instruction, the Wisconsin Indian Education Association. So WisconsinFirstNations.org is really, it's a resource repository. I recommend starting there because it is going to lead you to other websites that have curated, reviewed and vetted book collections, videos. Theways.org is just a phenomenal resource. Theways.org has short 4 to 5 minute vignettes. Videos for each of the tribal nations in Wisconsin. And I think that the ways, one, they're super hip videos. So they you watch one and then you'll be hung up watching all of them. But they really do a lot on theways.org to link to other resources as well.
Well, it's been great talking with you today, Rebecca. I hope, I'm sorry we're out of time. I hope we have a chance to talk again when you come back and be with us again.
Yes, absolutely. Miigwech. That is thank you in Ojibwe for having me. I enjoyed being here.
Rebecca Comfort, American Indian Nations liaison with the Wisconsin Historical Society. She's a member of the Keweenaw Bay Indian Community Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe. So it's wonderful to have her with us today, and we'll have her back, and we will visit with her again. We're going to switch gears a little bit and talk with you about a new book out. It's called The Trial of the Edmund Fitzgerald. That next. I'm Larry Mueller.